And she just mm-hmm. turned and looked at me and said, you know, if you really want to help, become a foster parent.
It's the Foster to Forever podcast. Happy stories of non-traditional families born through foster to adopt. I'm your host, Rachel Fulginetti. My guest today is Jay Schindel, and he's here with little Jameson, who you can't see off camera because of anonymity purposes, but he's super, super cute, and I wish that we could show him to you. Anyway, Jay, welcome, and thank you so much for taking the time to speak with us this morning.
Oh, thank you very much for having us.
I was so interested to get your take and to hear your story. Because I know it's been a long journey. Jay and I were introduced through Extraordinary Families, which is a foster family agency that we both have used to foster, to adopt our children. First, tell us where you are right now with Jameson.
Jameson is 8 months old. He's been with me since he was 5 days old. Brought him home from the hospital. He's actually my fifth child that I've had here. And we are moving toward adoption at this point.
TPR has happened, TPR being termination of parental rights.
Yes, that happened in March, 2 months ago. And at this point, the adoption process for me is all new, uncharted territory. The other four children I had were all reunited with family. So this is all new. But I am told that at this point, we're simply waiting for paperwork to be processed by the state so we can sign it and be a forever family.
That part of it took so long for me personally. I felt like both times it was waiting for, are you waiting for the acknowledgement to come back from Sacramento? Is that like what you're waiting for?
I believe so, yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then and then we set a signing date or something.
And then you do the signing.
Yeah.
Exactly. Right. And I could not believe how long it would take for a piece of paper to go from LA to Sacramento and to be signed off there. And then it's basically saying that the child is available for adoption.
Yeah. So I actually offered to actually drive it up to Sacramento and have them sign and bring it back. It would take less time. And
me too.
You know, yeah.
Me too. And they were like, yep, nope, that can't happen. Yeah. I know. But it will happen. And I'm thrilled for you. And also keep checking up, just FYI, because with ours, like I had to, you have to kind of be a little bit of a squeaky wheel in like the nicest way possible.
Right.
Right.
Yeah.
So. Because things get slipped under the cracks and things get pushed. You know, I had like one social worker that had gone on leave and no one told us. So like no one kind of knew where our case was. Yeah, this was just with my son who we finalized with last month.
Oh, wow.
And it just went into this limbo where it was like no one really knew who had the case or what was happening. So you just have to like follow up and always be nice about it. But like, just keep following up.
Yeah, definitely. So, but it'll happen, you know.
It will.
Yeah, we're just
there's nothing to worry about.
Yeah, exactly. So I always worry a little bit just because, until it's final, you just never know. But
100%.
It's always in the back of my mind. Something could happen. But at this point.
I know.
I
felt that way, too. It's like until I sign that paperwork, until I'm there.
Yeah,
so, I feel you. So let's go back, if we can, to the very beginning. Like, what brought you to foster to adopt? And did you always know you wanted children? Did you always know you wanted to foster? Like, what brought you there?
Actually, it's a really weird story. I never intended to do this. I mean, I've always loved kids. I have nieces and nephews, and you know, I love being with them and taking care of them. I've known them since they were born, and being around children has always been great, and I always thought about it, but I never got married or anything. So I just kind of, this is just not in the cards for me.
Right.
And then about, I guess now it's been about 6.5 years or so, I was sitting with a friend one day. We were out at the beach and just, chatting. She's on the board of directors of Extraordinary Families.
Oh, okay.
And we were just talking about it, and she was telling me about this fundraiser she was doing for the agency. And I said, well, what exactly is this agency? What did they do? Mm-hmm. And so she explained the foster and adoption process and, you know, the support they provide and all that. And I thought it was just amazing. And I said, you know, this is, sounds like a great group. And I said, you know, that's amazing. If there's anything I could do to help you with this fundraiser, you know, let me know. I'd be happy to volunteer my time. And she just turned and looked at me and said, you know, if you really want to help, become a foster parent. Aww. I was like, I can't be a foster parent. you know,
you're like I'm me.
Single. Yeah, I mean, like I somebody that, and she said, you know, if you're willing to love a child and care for them, that's all that matters. I know you. You'll be really good at this. I'm going to have someone call you tomorrow. And sure enough, the next morning, I get a call. So Brooke says, you want to be a foster parent, right? I'm like, I guess so. So there was an orientation starting the next week. I went to that and listened to the whole, you know, that kind of bit. And then they said, you know, it's 5 weeks of training. There's no cost. I was like, well, I guess nothing to lose. Let's try it and see what happens.
Yep.
And then after that, I was kind of, I was still like, you know, kind of apprehensive, you know, and I started all the certification work. There's so much, you know, it took about 6 months for me to get all that done. And
yeah,
the whole time I just kept waiting for them to call and say like, nah, you know, I
we looked into you. And where you're not fit.
Exactly. You know, all those background checks and the financial checks and your housing and your, you know, everything about it. I thought somewhere in there, they're going to find some reason to say no.
Right.
And so, you know, I kept waiting for that. And finally I got the call that said, you're approved. When would you like to go on the list for a child? I was like, oh my gosh, how did that happen?
Yeah. So,
just like that. Now all of a sudden I'm an approved foster adoption resource parent, you know?
And had you, what had you chosen in terms of like, did you know you wanted a baby or what was the age range that you were open to?
I went for the 0 for 2, mainly because they told me, well, two reasons really. One, because I live in a one bedroom, if they're over two, they need their own bedroom. So I was gonna have to move. And I thought, I don't even know how good I'm going to be at this or if this is, you know, so I didn't want to completely, you know, have to sell this place and buy a whole new one just because, you know.
Right.
But the other reason, they said that not a lot of people seem to want infants. They said they have a hard time placing them because they said, you know, nobody wants to get up, you know, every hour all night long. They prefer kids that are already toilet trained and, you know, can tell you what they want. And I'm like,
okay,
I can deal with that. I love babies. They're great. Put me down for the babies.
Aww.
So that was really it.
You know.
And, you know, but and it's worked out great.
Were you going into it as just foster care or were you thinking originally foster to adopt?
Oh, originally I was just going to be foster. I was just going to be that home that the kids could come to until they found their forever home.
Right.
And my first child, I brought him home. He was 2 days old when I got him. And by the end of that first night, I had changed my mind. No, I want to keep this one forever. I was in love with him already. And I was like, and actually the first couple of weeks, there were a few times where they the county was threatening to move him elsewhere. And I was just so broken up about it. Like, no, he just got here.
Why were they threatening to move him for?
It was just county nonsense. They were, and EF came through. My EF worker was like, no, I'm going to take care of this. And got it all straightened out. But they were just
there you go.
Being goofy. At that point, I was like, maybe I should consider, you know, and, you know, each child has been different. So you never know when you get them is going to happen.
Right.
Some of the children were definitely, you know, this child is definitely being reunified. The parents are, you know, so involved and all. And other times it was like, wow, I might get to keep this one because, you know, the parents, you know, have every been gone case, for months at a time and,
yes,
you know, things like that. So you just never know.
Every case is different. Going back just really briefly to when you said EF, Extraordinary Families, jumped in, that speaks to something that I always tell people who come to me asking about foster to adopt and getting certified. I always encourage them to go with a nonprofit, with a foster family agency, because really in the process, they are would be the only people advocating for you, the resource parent. So I just want to like point that out to listeners who maybe haven't gone through this process that like there's two ways that you could do it. You could go straight through the county in your area, or you could go through a foster family agency. And I personally really recommend going through a foster family agency just so that they can help with this, kind of be the buffer or the go-between or the squeaky wheel for you in between you and the county. So I think that's important to just acknowledge.
Oh yeah, absolutely. I don't think I would have survived without Extraordinary Families.
Yeah.
Just because you don't know the rules. You don't know how things are supposed to go. And the county isn't really forthcoming. They don't really have the time necessarily. Sometimes, unfortunately, they don't really care.
Right.
They just go, this is the rules. And in that particular case, they were demanding that I set up visits with the child's parents.
Mm-hmm.
And if I couldn't do that, they'd move him to someone who could.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, well, I didn't know back then, being my first placement, that it was not my responsibility to set up that. It was them. I didn't know how to get a hold of the mom. I didn't know who the father even was. We never did find out. But they were making this, you know, completely undoable request from me. And I was having a meltdown, and EF stepped right in and said, no, that's not the way it works. We'll take care of it. And they called, and actually the case was reassigned to another county worker. We'll take care of it. You know, so it was and without them, he probably would have been taken away and I would have been done with the process.
Yes.
And with EF, they were there watching me the entire time and helping me and
answering questions. Like whenever you get suddenly you get some new piece of information, you can call right away and just be like, what is this? Help me.
You know, when you first get a child, you know, I know that they covered it in training, but they don't always tell you, you know, like all the calls you're going to get in those first few weeks from so many people. And like, you know, I was going to call like, you know, I get a call from a MAD assessor. What's a MAD assessor? And my extraordinary families worker is like, no, it's MAT, M-A-T, not MAD. But and this is what it is, and this is what they're going to do. And I'm like, oh, okay. I'll call them back then and tell them to come over, you know.
Yep.
But you get all those people showing up and all these calls, and you're like, yeah, you have no idea what anything
it's
is.
It's true.
Yeah.
It's true. I found that part really overwhelming both times with both my children, is just how many appointments there are and different. And that is something that like, maybe you're learning so much that you don't take it in, or maybe they don't say it as much. I don't know. But like, there's just a lot of, and again, for listeners who might not know, when you first bring a child home, there's a lot of people that need to oversee this child and this placement and make sure that, and rightfully so, make sure that the child is healthy, make sure that the child, if they need services or not, whether that be physical, mental, behavioral, whatever it is, doctors and specialists and assessors and any manner of people. So when you first bring a child home, just be prepared. There's going to be a lot of appointments, which speaks to another question I have for you. Was your life set up so that you could accommodate all of that during the workday? Because usually all of that takes place like during the weekday. And, if you're working 9 to 5 or whatever, that might be tough if you're a single parent. How did you handle that?
I was very lucky. I was working in a studio. I'd actually was supposed to be done with the project I was working on before the child arrived. And of course that didn't happen. So the child arrived, I was still at work.
Yep.
But my boss was really, really generous. And he's like, you take off whatever time you need. We'll get this thing done either way. You know, so like when the call came to go get the kid, it was like 11 o'clock in the morning. on a Tuesday.
Right.
And I'm like, I just got a call. He goes, go.
Aww, that's amazing.
And,
yeah.
You know, then I called in the next morning and go, I was up all night with the kid. They're like, don't come in. Stay home.
Wow.
Get some sleep. You know, and every time I needed something, it was great. And I've been lucky that ever since then, all of the jobs that I've had have been very, very accommodating.
That's so great. That's so great.
Now I'm working and I can bring him in with me.
So he comes
to work with me. And, and it's going to be harder, once he's walking and things like that, but he's crawling right now, so I can keep him contained. But once he's walking, then, he'll go to daycare and which will be great for him to, start socializing with other children. And, it's amazing how accommodating all, my bosses have been
since I've been doing this
when I explain what I'm doing and why.
Yeah.
And, introduce them to the kids. They're like, yeah, whatever you need,
I love that.
Really,
that gives
really
me
helpful.
That gives me hope and faith in our community. That's awesome. Yeah. When I first brought Izzy home as a baby, my daughter, I'm an audiobook narrator, and I would just have her in the studio with me, because she would just sleep. Every once in a while she'd cry or whatever, and then I'd have to stop. But it was easy when she was a baby. Not so easy when she became a toddler.
Yeah, it was funny. I was taking my second placement when she started walking. It was so cute. I would take her into work with me. I was teaching at the time, and I'd go into the classroom and teach at this college, and she would start walking around, and she'd be looking under every desk and going, computer, let's start unplugging cords. So I was like, okay, it's time to find her some other care.
Right.
They'll let you know when. But it was pretty amusing. So
it becomes obvious. Yeah.
Yeah. So
that's funny. So let's just talk for a minute about and I know there's been a lot of them, but just briefly, I want to give people a sense of the very real, the reality of the journey. So you were with your first placement for how long?
1 year.
1 year. During that time, were you doing visits? Were you sort of aware that it was coming for months before and you had time to prepare? Or did you know that he or she was going to be reunified? Or
No, actually, it was a really weird situation that father, we never knew who that was.
Okay.
And mother was homeless. So getting a hold of her for a visit was impossible. Nobody knew where she was.
Yep.
So for many months, there were no visits at all.
Right.
And everybody's just wondering, what's going to happen. And it started to look actually like, he might stay with me simply because there was no family. In fact, we had a court hearing. He was about 8 months old, and we had there was a court hearing, and mother showed up to that only because she'd been arrested the week before.
This is very similar to my story with my daughter. Yeah. Very similar.
Yeah. It was crazy. And it was really weird because she went into court and I didn't bring him, but I brought videos so she could see him, And she's like, but, she was stunned because when she saw him, he was just born. Now he's 8 months old crawling around. And she couldn't fathom it was the same child. But she's like, oh, I really want to get him back. And in court, the judge said, we'll help you. We'll give you services like that.
Yeah.
Court was over. And instead of getting in the van to go back to the holding cell, she turned and walked out an exit and vanished again. She just left. And we're like, okay. So at that point, I was like, okay, mother's gone in the wind. And of course he's going to stay now. And then his aunt had been coming down for visits. She lived a few hours south, and she came once a month for 2 hours and saw him. And she decided to take him. And so she started going through the certification process, and we just kept going, no, no, no. And then eventually she was certified, and the judge said, okay, send him there.
Just to interject for listeners who might be just hearing this for the first time, the goal in all foster cases is reunification with birth family. And that's always the goal until the termination of parental rights, basically, right? Like until they've decided that they've ruled out that there's any other family. And the reasons for that we could go into on another show, but basically it used to be that the system was taking away kids all the time, separating families with very little effort to allow the birth parents to get it together or to find other family. And it was really affecting communities, and it was affecting obviously the children and the families. And anyway, they kind of swung back in the other direction. So now it's all about reunification. Even like with Jay, if he's had this child, really the only parent that this child has ever known for 8 months, the goal is still reunification. And that's a really, really difficult part of fostering, because basically, even if you're on a foster to adopt tract, and I always try to tell people this, it's still fostering until it's an adoption case. You're fostering. You're a placeholder, basically. You're providing a safe place for this child until they can be reunified with someone in their blood family. And, you know, people have feelings about that. There's a lot of feelings on both sides about that, but that is the case. So just to put that out there. So when that happened, the day that that happened, were you given warning ahead of time, like this is going to happen in 2 weeks? Or because I've heard stories where it's like, oh, they call you and they're like, they need to be ready tomorrow. How was it?
That has happened. But in this case, they were, I got to admit, they were really, really generous. It was the court hearing to send him back was 2 weeks before his first birthday. Mm-hmm. And I'd had him since I was two days old. So the county worker called me and said, we're sending him back, but we're going to let you have him till after his first birthday so you can celebrate with him.
Oh, that's nice.
And I was like, oh, that's just, you know, I mean, it was heart-wrenching, but still.
Yeah.
So we were able to have a big birthday party for him. We went to reserved a park in Beverly Hills, and there was like 50 people because he had such a big family here.
Yes.
All the people he had gotten to know. Everybody came out. We had this amazing party. And then everybody came back here for the evening, which is sad knowing it was our last night together.
My God,
and then the next morning I had to, you know, send him away. And I'm going to start crying in a minute thinking about it.
I know. I know.
But it was really nice of them to do that. And even his aunt you know, I invited her to the party, but she couldn't drive up. But, you know, I sent her pictures and all. And so she could see his first birthday. And, you know, we had that special last day. And I know you can't see it on the wall, but there's a picture of him in his little first birthday outfit up there. And, you know, it was, you know, I was glad they were able to let me do that.
Yeah.
It's still a happy memory.
Were you able to stay in touch at all? Or is that not...
We do. I send him a birthday present every year. And then she sends me pictures of him.
Oh, that's
what he's
good.
Doing. Which will actually, his birthday's next month. He's going to be 5. And so I'll send him I'm going to figure out what a 5-year-old wants now. But, you know, she's really cool with that. And I know she's always promising that she'll send me more pictures and I can come visit. But, you know, I think they just get too busy. He's, you know.
Right.
Last year, the pictures were, you know, he's with his soccer team and then a couple travel pictures. He and I guess another family, they all went somewhere to Arizona or New Mexico or something to touch by the landscape. And he's doing great. And he's got lots of siblings that they found. So, you know, he's with them and, you know, they're all older and like teenagers. And so he's just... happy little boy.
He's well taken
care of.
He's
doing well, and,
and
it makes my heart happy that, you know, that's, you know, yay.
How long did it take you to, I mean, I think in a sense, maybe you never get over that. I don't know. Can you speak to that?
Yeah, I can liken it to, right when I first started training, my father died. And so I never actually got to tell him I was going to be a foster parent. But going by that, what that grief was, you know, going mm-hmm. through all. This was much, much worse. It was, it's just, wow. It's a bigger loss because, you know, my dad was 83 and he lived right. a wonderful life. And, right. you know, we knew it was coming and all that. But this little boy that's still out there today,
yes.
that you just can't see anymore. Yeah. And you just, it was so hard and it's still hard.
Yeah.
But I think like everything else, you slowly, you forget that part and you just remember right. the happy times. You remember yep. the memories, the things that we did. Pictures keep popping up, you know, on the phone. And, you know, it's like, here's yep. a memory from 4 years ago. It's like, oh, right. that time we went to the aquarium. Oh, he loved yeah. it, you know. And eventually you move on.
Right.
The thing that happened to me after he left, I mean, it was, to me, the most devastating thing ever. And I didn't know how I was going to get through it. And I was really lucky. My EF worker lives 5 blocks away. Mm. We found out very quick. So she had nice. Been over here all the time, mm-hmm. you know, with him and playing with us. So even when she wasn't sure. visiting, official visit, she was right. just, you know, we'd go out for a walk and we'd see her. She's out walking her dog and we'd go for a
yeah.
walk together.
Yeah, yeah.
Things like that. So after he left, she started just coming by, just checking on me.
Aww,
you know,
that's
like, are
nice.
You all right? And trying yep. to get yep. me to cheer up. And after 2 months, she knew exactly what was needed. That she called me one day and said, I know you're not ready for another child. Mm-hmm. And I wouldn't ask this, but I'm really in a bind. I have a little girl. Mm-hmm. I just need a place for 2 weeks. She's got court in 2 weeks. She's going to be going back to her parents. Mm-hmm. I just need for 2 weeks. I know you'd mm-hmm. love her. Can you take mm-hmm. her? And I was like, I can't say no. This kid needs right. a home, you know?
Right.
So,
yeah.
okay, yeah. we'll go ahead and do it. So she brought this little girl over. She was 8 months old. Just adorable, so sweet. And she came right to me and, you know, just came and hugged me and held me. And, you know, I was like, okay, I can do this. And then the court hearing in 2 weeks didn't go the parents' way. And she ended up being with me for 8 months. But
so again, you're thinking that you will maybe adopt this child.
Not this, the second
not
one.
Not this
was,
one.
It was really clear from the beginning that her parents wanted her back. They were so involved. She was here like an hour and they were already texting me going,
okay,
we have visits 2 times a week and uh-huh. we want to see her and how's she doing so far?
Okay.
And I mean, they, mm-hmm. so it was, I was like, okay, they need her back. They deserve to be a family.
Right.
Yeah. Let's work yep. on this. And we all worked hard to make that happen, but
right.
the court wasn't quite convinced. So it took, you know, 8 months for that to actually get the approval.
Right. Yes. Everything happens very right. slowly so, in the court system.
right. But it was okay. You know, we had a great right. time. She was just such a joy to have here. And, you know, and she really, it helped because I stopped thinking about the first one so much. I mean, he was always right. on my mind. He's still always on my mind. But
sure.
you know, it's like, okay, I've got this one now to love and care for.
Yeah.
And she
yeah.
needs my attention. She needs all of my love. you know, let's yeah. you know, I'll give that to her. And
right.
you know, it makes the process easier when you move on. It's you know
right. yes.
Yeah. You know,
I think
like
service,
yeah,
right. Like giving service, really, it takes you out of your own,
yeah,
situation, and it just, you know, you're helping somebody else, and that feels good. And I'll yeah. never forget our first aid teacher the first time that we were getting certified. She said something I never forgot, which was, the placement might not be permanent, but what you do is permanent. And that yeah. always just struck me. It's like, I mean, what you provided for both of those children, all of yeah. the children in right. your life has just, you can't replace that. That is a lifelong yeah. gift that you have given yeah. them, stability and love yeah. and comfort and health and all of this stuff. So that is just yeah. unbelievable. It's an
yeah,
unbelievable
absolutely.
Gift.
And, you know, that's really what I keep telling myself that, you know, this is what we signed up for, to help
right.
these children in their time of need and,
that's right.
and help these families get back together if that's what it is or,
yep.
you know, but we're here yep. for them. So
tell me about number three. So then how long after she left, did you bring home number three?
Oh, that was about 2 weeks. Because she left in February of pandemic year. And I could already sort of see the writing on the wall. And mm-hmm. by March, it was pretty obvious that things were going to start shutting down. We were all going to be locked mm-hmm. in our homes. Mm-hmm, and so mm-hmm. I called extraordinary families and said, you know I'm going to be here for many months
yeah.
in my home by myself. If yep. there's a child, you know, now's the yes. time before everything shuts down, send him over. And the
Amazing.
Next day, this little 5-month-old boy arrived.
Wow.
You know? So yeah, it was really quick. And they were even like, are you sure? I'm like, yeah,
right.
I absolutely. Let's just, you know, because I knew too, you know, from after getting the second one that, you know, having another child here, you know, it helps you.
It helps. Yeah.
And it's, you know, heals your heart. And, you know, so I thought, yeah, absolutely.
Wow.
So
amazing.
So yeah, he was, yeah, 2 weeks later, there he
wow.
was.
And yeah. then how long was he with you?
He was with me 19 months.
Okay.
A very long.
That's a long one.
And I think a lot of it was because of the pandemic that obviously we couldn't have visits with his parents.
Right.
We tried FaceTime visits and things like
uh-huh.
that. But with a, you know, 6-month-old kid, they don't really spend a whole
yeah,
lot of time on
do
the
FaceTime.
Camera. They're like, oh, who's that? Okay, no, I'm going to go play. So yeah. I just like would hold the phone and go like, you want to watch your son play for a while?
That's
right. You know, you can, but
yep.
that's kind of
yep.
it.
Yep.
So, and then once things finally did start opening back up again, we had, you know, play dates in the park and the extraordinary families had the outdoor meeting area. So we started
mm-hmm.
using that
yep.
when we could, but dad's visits were, you know, off and on. He
uh-huh.
wasn't very consistent, and mom as well. She was just, you know, sometimes she'd show up for a visit, sometimes she wouldn't.
Right.
And I think that's why the judge kept prolonging it.
Going, uh-huh.
well, you know, you've got to be more responsible, and you're going to
yep.
have to prove that you can, you know, take this kid. And then finally, yeah, it was November of the next year.
Mm-hmm.
It was 19 months, and we're like,
that's a long time.
Okay, at this point, he had already turned 2. I'm
yeah.
like, do I need to move? Because, you know, he
yeah.
needs his own place now and this and
right.
that. Is he staying? And the court said, you know, take a couple months. Don't move yet. Let's have a hearing and decide what's going to happen.
Did you have any contact after that with him?
I did, yeah. Actually, for the first few months, because she was a young mom.
Mm-hmm.
And this is really the first time she had been a full-time mom.
Uh-huh.
He was 5 months old, so now he's
right.
he's over 2. He's running. He's climbing
yeah.
on everything. He's
oh,
he's
yeah.
a very active little boy. And she would call or text and just say, you know, I need a break. Can you come take
mm-hmm.
him for a day? I'd be like,
wow.
sure, yeah. So I would drive down, pick him up, and take him to the park
oh,
or the aquarium or something.
Uh-huh.
So for the first few months, that happened a lot.
Uh-huh.
So we
uh-huh.
did get visits,
uh-huh.
but that's slowed down.
Uh-huh.
Over the months, and eventually,
mm-hmm.
I think they moved out of the
okay.
country.
Okay.
The texts have dropped off, and contact
mm-hmm.
has dropped off. So yeah, I don't really know where they are at this point.
Right.
So I hope he's okay. You know, of course you hope in your
yeah.
heart everything's fine, but
yeah.
I don't really know. And I don't really want to be that person that keeps texting going, is he okay? Is he okay? Because
right.
it's not, I'm not really supposed to. I mean, that's not my
right.
responsibility to check
right.
on him. So, you know, I'll text him on his birthday, you know, I'll text
right.
her and just say, you know, please give him a big hug for me.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
And did that, was that one, and I don't even know if this is probably a dumb question, but like, was it any easier that time because you'd already been through it, or was it even more difficult because you'd been together even longer, or can you not even compare? It's like, there's no, it's just, they're both hard.
They're both hard. You know, that was really hard because, yeah, after 19 months,
yeah.
you know, it was like, you know, it was, we were such a pair that, especially because being in the pandemic together and just the
yeah.
two of us, he didn't talk because he never needed to, because he
uh-huh.
knew exactly how to communicate with me. you know, I'm hungry, I'm thirsty, you know, he can go to the fridge and point to exactly what he wanted. So do you want to go down, kid? So he, that was one of the, his issues was like, I couldn't get him to say anything because, you know, he didn't realize that other kids actually spoke.
Right. You right. Because there's no other kids around. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. So, yeah. But yeah, we just understood each other. We had traveled together, went to two weddings, you know, together, wow. Little matching tuxedos. Yeah, it was so much fun. We had just the best time. And because mom was so sort of hit and miss as far as visits and yeah. what she'd do and all that, we were honestly convinced even if he did go back that she would call after a month and go, yeah, no, I can't handle him.
Right. Yeah.
And he'd come right. back. So yep. we were kind yep. of expecting that, you know.
Right. Yeah.
You're starting a family's worker was, you know, the same way. It's like,
yep.
you're planning to do any traveling now? I'm like, no, I'm going to stay in town for a couple yep. months, yep. see what happens.
Yep. Sure.
So, yeah. Yep. So, and she was definitely having a hard time when I would go to pick him up. You know, uh-huh. you could tell I was overworked and just,
right.
you know, frazzled and dull. But, yeah. yeah. So it was really hard to see that. And, yeah. you know.
Right. And to worry, like, is yeah. is he okay? Like, yeah. you know, is he safe? Is he okay? Is I know.
Yeah.
I know.
Yeah. You just have no idea.
It's
so,
really, really difficult. Yeah. Okay. So then after that, there's another baby. When did that other baby come?
That was about 5 months later. I okay. decided to take some time, just kind of like, uh-huh. you know, after 19 months, I was like, you know, it was actually, well, after several years, because, you know, they all came pretty quickly together. So I was like,
right.
I
yeah.
need some time. I'll do some traveling, just regroup. And then
yes.
I put my name back on the list and I got this little baby boy who was 5 days old. He was premature, but a beautiful little boy. So I went up to the hospital. They wouldn't release him right away.
Uh-huh.
So I spent 2 days in the hospital in the mm-hmm. NICU or what do they
yep.
call it? The
yep. yeah. NICU. Yep. That's
yeah.
the same
and,
with my
And they said, you know, yep. the nurse was like, just sit with him. Just, you know, mm-hmm. let him get to know you and feel you. And here, you can feed him if you want. And, you know, here, change him.
Yep. Yep. Yep.
And then after a couple of days, he was big enough that, you know, they said, you can take him home.
Mm-hmm.
And he was only here for 2 months.
Okay.
And we had a couple of CFTs, conferences with the family. His social worker was amazing from the county. So I wish they all the county workers were like her. She was incredible. But yeah, she arranged this phone call and we got on with our social workers. We got on with his mom, his aunt, his grandma.
Wow.
And another aunt. And the mom kept saying, you know, it's like, you know, she really wanted him back, but she had some issues. And mm-hmm. you know, he was taken because of drugs and mm-hmm. He was going through withdrawal when I had him.
Mm-hmm.
And
mm-hmm.
she's like, I don't know if I can get my act together. I really want him back. I love him so much. I don't know. And this, her sisters and her mom were both like, you're not going through this alone. We are, mm-hmm. in fact, the
wow.
one aunt that was taking him, it was up in like Palmdale or Lancaster or something like that.
Okay.
The rest of them lived in Arizona or New Mexico,
mm-hmm.
and they were going to move to California. They were
wow.
going to move to that town to be there for her.
Wow. Okay.
And be there for him. I was like, okay, I feel really good that this little boy
right.
is going to a place where he's going to be so loved
be
by
loved
this family.
And taken
they
care
were
of.
Just all there. And
yep.
the aunt that took him had two little ones herself. So
oh,
she was already,
nice.
You know, yeah, I know how to
yep.
deal with kids. So
right.
not a problem.
Right.
Yep. I've got everything. And I was like, you know, I felt really good about him going there and knowing that
right.
he was, you know, to be so loved and cared
yeah.
for and
yeah
and mom seemed she was a good person she just you know had to work some stuff out but I
yeah
you know she was going to get
yep.
the support and you know and even in 2 months I still fell in love with him and missed him
right.
when he went but
yeah
you know it was you know it was good it was you know
yeah that yeah. that was a an easier one probably
yeah,
just because yeah you knew that he was going someplace
exactly yeah
where he
so,
would be taken care of
yeah
yep.
so when you know that they're going good and the same with the second one when she left
mm-hmm.
you know her parents had been so hands-on and we'd become
yeah.
friends over the 8 months that you know I was like okay she's in you know they're gonna love her they're she's
yep.
gonna drive them crazy because she's
yep.
such a strong-willed little girl and
right.
but that she's going to be loved and cared for. And that's what you
and
want. So.
Do you have pictures of all of them that you keep? Like, do you have pictures
yeah, those
of each
are
one
all,
of them?
Yeah, aww. They're all on the walls. They're my kids.
That's so
They'll
sweet.
Always be my kids regardless.
Yeah.
So, yeah. That
yeah.
just never changes.
That's so. Right. I remember when I was, before we certified to foster to adopt and we were thinking about it, I had a phone call with a woman who was like a friend of a friend who had done it. And she had had a child for 9 months wow. and then he was reunified before she adopted her forever family child. And she still referred to him as her son. Mm-hmm. And I remember being so struck by that. I was like, you still refer to him as your son. And she's like, oh, he'll always be my son.
Yeah.
So. and I said, and this is one of the things that made me like, okay, I'm going to do this. I said, after hearing her whole story, I said like, okay, knowing how hard that was and that he was taken away, would you do it all again, knowing that that was going to happen? And she did not miss a beat. She was like, absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
And I was stunned. I remember at the time, because I didn't know that much about foster to adopt. And I was like, really? And she was like, absolutely. He was worth it. Like, I would do that for him again in a second. Like, yes, 100%.
Yeah, the so memories that, are just, yeah.
Yeah. And how it changed her, like, and just opened her heart and all of that. So that's that's an incredible part of it. That's like the hard part, but also a really incredible gift.
Yeah. The times you're with them so far outweighs the time you're not when you lose them.
Wow.
When they go away. It's not even close.
Wow.
It's just so, okay. I got... After the first one left, I got a ring because I never got married. So I didn't have a wedding ring. So I got this and I had his name engraved on it. And then I just keep adding each of the kids.
Oh my God, that's
at
amazing.
This point. So they're all five of them are now on here.
Oh, I love that.
And so they're always with, they're, this is my life.
That,
you know, that's.
Is so beautiful.
Yeah.
I love that idea. That's gorgeous.
So, yeah.
So
tell
me. It was
less painless than the tattoos. I was going to do tattoos on my arm, but I was like, no, this is difficult.
Right. That's perfect. That's perfect. So now tell me about Jameson.
So, well, about a week after the fourth one left, it was the weirdest situation ever, but I remember it so well. I was actually at school. I was teaching and I got a call and from EF from the placement person.
Mm-hmm.
And she said, okay, I know that he just left, but we have a little girl. She's a safe surrender.
Wow.
I was like,
you were like, what?
I thought those were just only a legend, like unicorns.
Right, like unicorns.
Yeah.
And for listeners who don't know what that is, safe surrender is when the birth mother willingly surrenders the baby. And so she says she can't take care of this child for whatever reason. And she signs off on it, basically. And then they have 15 days, if I'm correct, at least in California, because my son was also a safe surrender. 15 days to change their mind. But then I was warned, and I'm sure you probably were too, that even if the birth mom came back after 15 days, there was still, the court would still consider her request if she wanted the child back. So it wasn't like, oh, 15 days and then it's a totally done deal. It's still, there's that period of time that's where anything could happen.
So I said yes, of course, you know, right away. Yeah, I'll take this little girl. And so they began that process. And then the next day, Friday, Joel was calling me saying, okay, nobody knows where the little girl is anymore. We can't find her in the system. She's gone. And eventually they figured out what they think happened is that mom came back and found somebody had told her that if she had put the child up for adoption at a private adoption place, she would get paid for it. So that's what they think what happened.
How did she get the child? Like, where was the child that she would be able to, like, just take the child?
I don't know.
That's crazy.
Wherever she dropped it off or whatever, she must have gone back there and then found out from there. I don't honestly know. But after the next day, nobody could find her. So Jill said, you know, just we'll keep looking all weekend.
Yeah.
And I'll get back with you Monday. And, you know, but we don't know what happened. And I was just, you know, it's the kind of thing you just, like, your heart just drops. Like,
yeah,
oh, so close, you know.
Oh,
and
God,
Monday
yeah,
morning,
that's
you know,
crazy.
It was actually finals week at school, and I'm giving my first final, and Jill calls, and she just said, you know, I'm really sorry, but, you know, this child is gone, wherever it is. I'm really, really sorry. And I was just, you know, heartbroken. I'm like, okay, let me go back. And then not an hour later, she calls back and she goes, you're not going to believe this, but there's a baby boy safe surrender.
What?
I just got a call about. I'm like,
what?
Are you kidding? Are you teasing me? What?
Yeah, right. Like, you this know? Isn't a funny joke, Jill.
Yeah.
Wow.
You know, and she's like, do you want it? I go, absolutely. Oh my gosh.
Yes.
And so we spent all that day trying to get a hold of the county worker who had found it. And by the evening, Jill was like, I still haven't gotten a hold of this person. I've been calling the night shift. I'm calling everyone. Hang tight. We'll see if this happens. And the next morning, she called and she said, okay, we found the hospital he's at. How soon can you be there? And I was like, I can leave now. I can be there in 10 minutes. She said, go. Yeah. So I went over there and the hospital staff was actually, you know, like, we've been expecting you since Friday. He's been here that 5 days. I'm like, what? Nobody called me. I found out about him Monday. But he was in really good shape. He was premature. And you know, so they give me advice on how to take care of him. It's like two premature kids in a row.
Wow.
5 days old. But yeah, it worked out just absolutely perfectly. And, you know, like you said, I knew that, you know, mom had 2 weeks to come back.
Right.
So I was like counting every day going, please, not today. But here we are, you know, 8.5 months later, and we've never heard from any family at all.
Right.
And parental rights have been terminated, and, you know, we're,
yep.
was meant to be, you know, I really feel, because, you know, the way that the fourth one left at the same time and right before he was, if that one had stayed, then I wouldn't have been available for this, and they wouldn't have called me, and it just all seemed like it was lining up, like somehow the universe was going, this is what happens.
This is your son. And honestly, this is like a thing about this. This is like one of the biggest reasons why I wanted to do this podcast is because honestly, in every story I hear, there's that meant to be moment. Like there's just that thing that's like, we knew this was the one because like this happened, this unicorn thing happened.
Yeah, exactly.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
I love that.
So
I'm so, so happy for you. A couple more questions and then I'll let you go. Cause I know Jameson is like ready to have your attention. because there's no parents ever in the picture. And I am, the reason I ask this is because this is the situation with Dominic, with my son as well. Do you ever think about like getting him like a 23andMe or some kind of a, just so you can know, like, is some kind of like his ethnicity or did you get any of that kind of information or?
I haven't done it yet, but I do plan to. Just because, I don't know anything about him. I don't know his history, his ethnicity, his anything like that. And sooner or later, he's gonna ask.
Exactly.
You know, at some point, he's gonna go, well, where did I come from? And
that's right.
You know, all this, and I would like to know. So I thought, you know, definitely we'll do it at some point. And just try to see, you know, where he's from or if there's anything that I can learn from that.
I've heard that like for the child themselves, it's particularly difficult as a safe surrender because they never get any sort of or you know, they may never get any sort of idea of any kind of who their parents might have been, their biological parents. And that even if they got adopted and they have a wonderful, you know, amazing family unit and experience, that there's always that little thing of like, but anyone could be my parent, like out there in the world. And and I guess it's kind of like that in a way if with other situations, but I've just been reading a little bit about, particularly for safe surrenders where there's no information, that can be difficult. So I've had that on my mind, and I think like someday I'll do that as well. Like we'll do a 23andMe or something, and just see.
Yeah, Yeah, and we've been assigned, you know, the there's that safe surrender unit with the psychologist and doctors and everything that are assigned just to the safe surrender children.
Yes,
and
that's right.
They've been here twice already. And, you know, that's one of the things I've brought up is like, what do I tell him when he's older?
Right.
And all that. And they're like, don't worry about it now. We're going to be with you till he's 18. So we're going to help you through all that. And I've gotten a couple books on, you know, what to tell your adopted child and things like that. And reading all those. So, you know, hopefully at that point, when that does happen, we'll, you know, I'll know the answers or be able to explain to them the best way I can. You know,
that's right. Yeah. I was just talking to another family and they were saying, hey, look, we all have challenges, right, in life. There's things in every single one of our stories that is difficult or challenging or traumatic, you know, whatever it is. So it's like how you meet that, how you deal with it is the thing. Yeah. If you came across other people that were thinking about doing this, taking this journey, would you have, what advice would you give to them or what, any kind of words would you share with them about this journey?
I would say do it. Absolutely. It's the best thing ever. Yeah. I mean, the way this changes your life as you care for these kids and love them and give them everything you can, there's nothing else like it in the world. You know, I told a training class a couple months ago, I said, you know, I have been all over the world. I've walked on the Great Wall of China. I've been inside the pyramids of Egypt. I've walked red carpets with movie stars. You know, I once had an afternoon with Princess Diana. I mean, I've just had all sorts of amazing things happen.
Yeah.
And yet none of that compares to this, you know? And the only thing I really can say now is I can't wait to take him to all these places and share all that with them, you know, and just say, see how amazing the world is. Look at this. But yeah, it's the best thing ever. Just being here with these children and watching them grow and develop and, you know, you care for them and love them. And this is what life is about.
Oh God, that's so gorgeous.
You know,
that is so gorgeous. Your karma and your like, just your life path, like you're fulfilling something really deep. And that is just incredible.
It is. And once, you know, if our adoption does go through, hopefully, and I'll, you know, knock on wood and all's good, you know, after a couple of years, we're going to start doing it again.
Amazing.
You can have a little brother or sister, you know.
Oh my God, I love you so much.
I mean,
absolutely.
So, because there will still be more kids. And
one last question, I can't resist.
Okay.
What would you say to people? Because I hear people a lot who say, oh, but I'm too old to do this. Like, I can't do this now because I'm too old. Like, what would you say to them about that?
I'm 63.
Thank you. Thank you. That's all you need to say.
Yes. That's it. I am tired a lot.
Right.
But what parent isn't? But you're not too old. If you're able to love a child, that's all that matters.
Yes.
You know, so I don't know what it's going to be like when, you know, he graduates high school and I'm in a walker or whatever, but for now, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
You know, and somehow you pull up the energy and just keep going. And
you do. I think they keep you young. I mean, I'm an older mom too. And I'm like, they keep me young, you know, keep me on my feet.
Yeah, in the afternoon, we're playing with little musical toys and, you know, learning the alphabet. And I'm like, this is fun. It's, you know, definitely. I can't wait till he's old enough for Hot Wheels. And
I know. There's so many fun things. At every stage, there's like new fun things. Jay, thank you so much for your time.
You're very welcome.
And for your service to humanity. I mean, honestly, like, it's really amazing. You're amazing. And I'm so glad I know you. And just, we're going to leave the recording, but just stick around for a minute.
I will.
And thank you. It's been such a great time to talk to you.
Thank you, everyone, for listening.
This has been the Foster to Forever podcast. Happy stories of non-traditional families born through foster to adopt. Produced by Aquarius Rising. Edited by Jason Cerubi at Split Rock Studios. Original music composed by Joe Fulginetti. For more information or to stay in touch, visit FromFosterToForever.com. That's from Foster, the number 2, forever.com. And stay connected with us on Instagram at Foster2ForeverPodcast. That's Foster, the number 2, Forever Podcast. We'll see you next time.